Welcome to Life Lessons in Unexpected Places. The world is full of teachers if you know how to look and listen. With Asha Nayaswamy, one of the spiritual directors of Ananda Palo Alto and a founding member of Ananda Worldwide. If you enjoy this content and are inspired by the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda and his disciple Swami Kriyananda, find Asha on YouTube, Facebook, Patreon, all podcast directories, and her website, ashajoy.org.
Illusion. The ego is like a sliver of glass in the sun. Any light it emits only reflects the sunlight of God's presence behind it. The more one hides from that true light, the less one can know of happiness, and the more one must know of misery. Well, that's a pretty condemning little bit of information for us, isn't it? Since almost all of us live more in our ego than in our divine self, condemning us to misery is not very cheerful. The thing about these spiritual principles, though, which is very, very helpful to understand, is that these are not all or nothing ideas. It's not like we're either in the bliss state of God or we're in the absolute misery of ego. Swami Kriyananda often pointed out that spiritual values and spiritual development, it's directional. What that means is that it takes time, it takes energy, it's not usually an unbroken straight line of progress. It's a little bit more like the tide coming in. But as long as we're facing in the right direction and making an effort to expand our awareness toward a state of greater happiness, then more and more of the benefits of that effort will come to us. In Autobiography of a Yogi, Sri Yukteswar makes several statements that are very helpful. First, he says, the past lives of all men are dark with many shames. That's the long cycle of reincarnation. But everything in future will improve if we're making a spiritual effort now. So this is what Swami is talking about, that we need to come to a fundamental understanding of what creates happiness and what creates misery, and then begin to orient ourselves in the direction that is truly happiness producing. When Yogananda came to America in 1920 from India, he was the first Indian guru of that stature to make his life's work in the West. Vivekananda and Swami Ramatirtha had been to America before that, two very great saints, but they stayed only a brief time and left. Yogananda came to make his life here. And he brought with him a small publication of his own thoughts. It was ghostwritten by someone else, but it was his own thoughts. He called it The Science of Religion, and it was a very simple premise. Every sentient being has two fundamental motivations. One is to experience happiness, and the other is to escape suffering. They're, of course, the same principle. It's just that sometimes our orientation is to get away from pain. Sometimes it's an active, positive action, taking the initiative to seek happiness. But if one analyzes oneself carefully, every single decision one makes, even if they prove to be foolish in retrospect, was always because we thought it would reduce suffering and increase happiness. So the basic premise of spiritual development in life is that there are actual directional values that we can apply ourselves to, and if we apply ourselves to them conscientiously with right attention and with appropriate willpower, and we follow along in the right way, then the science of spiritual life, the science of religion, will simply prove itself because it's true. So one of these principles is to have a right understanding even of what ego is, and then understand how to work with it. Well, all of us have egos, and in psychology today it's talked about from many different lights, so I'm just going to use the words in the explanation the way Swami Kriyananda and Paramahansa Yogananda use them. Ego is let me start with a different way of saying it. That's sort of a hard way to get into it. But every one of us, every human being, every sentient being has within him or her a spark of the divinity which is infinite. And in fact, our true nature is really that infinite spark. And just like the glass itself is not the source of light, but it reflects light and appears to be the source. But the source is actually from another place, and it, in and of itself, it's not the origin point of its brightness. And so with us, we act as individuals in this world, we move through the world, we have freedom, a certain amount of will and freedom that we seem to exercise, and we begin to think that I am the origin point, I meaning everything that I attach with that personal pronoun, my body, my family, my talents, my gender, my culture, my language, all these things. One says I, and we think that's who we are. But where does that life force come from? What animates us in the first place? Where do our ideas come from? Where do our talents, where does our courage, where do our fears? All of these different questions that we ask, there's an entire spiritual practice which is just the simple question, who am I? And we just ask it over and over, who am I? Watching all the transitory versus the enduring, who am I? What does the pronoun I relate to? So the basic premise that is being presented here in this thought is the definition of ego as Yogananda presented it, which is the spark of infinity that is my true animating self becomes identified with the limited conditions in which I presently exist, or which I presently seem to exist. And now let me phrase that. It's real. It's really happening. It's just not the whole picture. When I was in high school, a friend of mine was an extremely gifted puppeteer. He made these extraordinary marionettes. I mean, just absolutely beautiful. His name was John Beatty, and he went on. I believe he's still living. He went on to be a set designer for Hollywood and a set designer in New York, and I believe he won prizes for what he did. Well, he was my childhood friend, and he and I would do these marionette shows for children. And he would make these incredible creatures, and then we would perform. And we didn't have a fancy theater of any kind. We just dressed in very conservative black clothes. And we just walked out in front of children and worked the marionettes right in front of them. When I said to John when we first started, I said, John, how is this going to work? We don't have any stage or anything to hide us. Oh, he says, you'll see. And we would go out there, and we would be there. We'd be in the voices and the movements of the marionettes, and the children never connected the two. The children just watched the marionettes, and they were so entrancing and so enjoyed them. And they would sort of see us and hear our voices, but they never really thought that they were the same. The origin point of the marionettes was the movement that they saw. We're exactly like that. We see everyone around us. We look in the mirror. We seem to move. But just outside of our ability to perceive it, there's this divine force that is moving us. And that is also an individual force. So it's not that there is no individuality. It's that there is an eternal individuality, and then there is a limited individuality. The eternal, in the Sanskrit word for it, is jiva. And the jiva is the consistent spark of individuality through all of our incarnations, from babyhood through old age. The jiva is always the same. That's who we really are. When we ask the question deeply enough, who am I? We eventually come to the jiva. And the jiva is the living spark of divinity that is not born and does not die. It's the bubble that eventually merges into the ocean but always remains the bubble. There's many beautiful philosophical thoughts here. But the infinite spark of divinity begins to define itself by the limited expression. And that's what ego is. Now, ego is necessary because we have to identify to some extent with this body. Otherwise, who's going to feed it? Who's going to take care of it? Who's going to sort of act out what it's supposed to do? But just as an actor on the stage loses himself or loses herself into the role and isn't thinking while they're acting, this isn't me, this isn't me. Swami Kriyananda was aspiring to be a playwright, and he went to a drama school, a theater group in Charlotte's, somewhere on the East Coast, Charlotte, North Carolina, I think, or something like that. Forgive me, I can't quite remember where it was. And he also was an actor in some of their performances. He said, but he was a terrible actor because the all time he was acting, he kept thinking, this isn't me, this isn't me. And so he couldn't really do the part well. I've had a very small interest in acting. It was something that I did more when I was younger. I gave it up by the time I was 20, pretty much. But I was pretty intent about it when I was interested in it. And I've done a little bit since I've been part of Ananda, just basically liturgical theater or with our school plays or something. When our school was very small, we have a school from kindergarten through 12th grade now. When the school was very small and we were just building it up, we had these big theater productions, but we didn't have enough children and we didn't have enough older children, so some of the adults would get on the stage. And we did the play about Jesus. The plays were always about spiritual figures, are always about spiritual figures. One of the plays, I played the part of Mary, the mother of Jesus. And in the story, there's not much said about what happened to Joseph, but in our particular version, because we had our own scripts, we had Joseph die. You know, we had a scene where Jesus and Mary are with Joseph. There are pictures, there are traditions about this. It's just not as common. And the man who was playing Jesus, because we were all adults by that point in the play, the man who was playing Jesus was a very good and professionally trained actor. I mean, he was really a talented person. So when you were on stage with him, you could have absolute faith that he would carry through in the part he was going to do. It was good to have adults with the children because the children rose to a much higher level of acting when they had to play against adults. We weren't able to sustain that because parents want to see their kids on stage, not their teachers. I mean, that's understandable. But I was there. I'm supposed to be Mary. My Joseph is on the, you know, on the bier, so to speak. And I'm just standing next to him, and my son, Jesus, has to take me away. And in that moment, because also the man who was playing Jesus was a big man, and I'm a small woman, and I was able to be so certain that Jesus would take me away in the play that I could actually really cling to the now dead form of my husband. There was no part of me that had to cooperate with him removing me. I could be exactly as I would have been if it had been my actual life, completely surrendered to the emotion of the moment, knowing that he would gather me up and take me away. Now, I say all of that with so much force because in all the amateur acting that I have ever done, that was the best moment that I have ever been in because I didn't have to think about anything except what was passing through me. But it wasn't me. I'm not the Virgin Mary. And yet, I just surrendered to it. Completely, that's who I became. Now, in our lives, our ego lives, we have to commit ourselves completely to what we're being asked to do. But a little piece of us, and even in that moment, even though I was totally committed to that, I never lost the awareness on a deeper level that it wasn't really me, it was just a part I was playing. And so what happens to us if we become too involved in the part we're playing, we never wake up from it. We never know what's really happening to us. And the problem is that the world that the ego is involved in, when we're identified with the body, with our age, with our gender, with our culture, these are temporary. These are temporary engagements. And therefore, at a certain point, they will be taken away from us. And they will never give us the kind of fulfillment that we really long for because they're not our true nature. Just as simple as that. And the misery comes because we're living a mistake. We're just living a mistake. I had a magnificent experience in that moment of acting, but I can't make a life out of the moments of acting. My life has to be what the reality of my actual life is. And then true happiness comes from realizing that what's real is itself only an elaborate play. And that the source of the light is God's light. And everything in this world merely reflects it back and confuses us and makes us think it's the origin point. But when we turn our attention to the real origin point of the light and begin to know ourselves in that way, that's where real happiness comes from. Illusion. The ego is like a sliver of glass in the sun. Any light it emits only reflects the sunlight of God's presence behind it. The more one hides from that true light, the less one can know of happiness, and the more one must know of misery.
Our work is made possible by inspired listeners, so if you feel to support Asha, you can make a one-time donation, or for unique members-only content, subscribe through Patreon. Blessings, and thank you.